Campus Miartlita Punsaba, Campus 103.7. Minajnejn barranin, Malta through international eyes. Naqleb l-Inglis mill-ewwel, għaliex il-maġġoranza ta' semija ta' din is-sensiela jifmu bl-Inglis, ma jifmux bil-Malti, għalla volli ovvjament hemm ħafna nies li jitkellmu l-Malti li jafu l-Malti Maltin illi jisimgħu is-sensiela wkoll. U fil-fatt il-persuna li ħall-intervista llum hija wkoll minn Malta, però għadtat ħafna snin tgħix fil-Ġermanja u għandha ħafna esperienza internazzjonali. Allura nagħti merħba lil Victor Scicluna. Welcome to the show, Victor Scicluna. You who have lived for a long time in Germany and have a lot of international experience. Victor Scicluna, welcome to the show.
Welcome. I'm happy to be here.
It's a great pleasure. You've been listening to the series. I know you reached out to me via email, thanks to the presence in on social media and online of Campus 103.7. So you've been a fan of the show, listening to my other guests, and now you are going to be a guest.
Yes, because I'm new in Malta, and I check the radios, and I simply love yours.
You love Campus 103.7.
Yes, I love it.
That's wonderful. That's very nice to hear. Thank you so much. When you say you're new in Malta, as in you've only been back from Germany...
2 years.
2 years. Okay, okay. So let's go back to the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. First of all, Victor, if you don't mind my asking, you are now in your 50s?
A bit older. I'm 65.
65. I always try and err on the side of caution, especially when it's a lady, but also if it's a gentleman. So 65, and take us to your childhood and youth. Originally, I believe, from Rabat.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about your childhood.
Exactly. I was born in Rabat, Malta, 1959. My parents moved to Santa Lucia, which was 100% new.
A new town,
new
isn't
town,
it?
Complete new town. In fact,
this
I think
is the 60s or 70s.
Yeah, exactly, it's the only town which was 100% new.
New and planned and
exactly,
sort of
exactly.
Yes,
I love Santa Lucia. Yeah. Then yes. I went to the Lyceum, and I never. I was the type of guy. I never thought. I never had even left Malta. So I never even thought I would one time live outside of Malta.
So what were your thoughts? Was that you'd stay in Malta and become a teacher?
Exactly. I was taught I would become a teacher, something like that.
The Liceo, the Lyceum that you mentioned, was one of the prestigious schools in Malta, wasn't it?
In fact, I remember to come in, I came number 50 from all Malta, which was quite an achievement.
Because everybody would do the exam.
Exactly.
And then they choose the top,
I think
whatever.
The top 80, top 100.
Oh, wow. Well
so
done.
I was quite proud, yes.
And you mind if I ask your background, your parents, as in
my father, he worked with the Malta Films Facilities.
Where
I remember, so I grew up basically watching John Collins, Roger Moore. Once I even played with the children of John Collins.
Gosh, when she was over here making a movie.
Yes, I didn't know why. My father on that day told me to come to the studios, and I was asked to play with the children. Later, I found out they were doing some nice sex scene.
Oh, goodness me, it was a controversial film that John Collins
and I was
doing
asked to
here.
Come to play with the children.
For the benefit of our listeners, the Malta Film Facilities have been around for quite a few years, and obviously, because Malta was part of the British Empire up till 1964, we would have a lot of British films and TV series filming in Malta when they wanted to film outside of the UK. Eventually, the facilities grew, and we started attracting many American films as well, until quite recently Gladiator 2 is one of the Jurassic Park movies has been filmed in Malta. So for those of you interested, do look up Malta and international films. There's quite a few websites that talk about Malta's experiences in the world of film and international television. But back to Victor Scicluna. So you didn't think that you'd ever go abroad?
No way. I had my own business in Malta. This was the days when all the top hotels were being built. Suncrest, Aura Palace.
The beginning
Holiday
of tourism.
Yes. And I had got myself involved in a special system selling master key locking systems to hotels.
Oh.
So I was like the guy in charge of all the keys for Suncrest Hotel, Holiday Inn.
Goodness.
I was designing all the systems. I had gone to UK, took a course there.
Uh-huh.
So I think me and just one other guy were the only two people in Malta qualified to do this.
You saw a gap in the market and you went for it.
Yes, I went for it.
Yes.
It was just a 1 hour lecture.
Mm-hmm.
We were five people. The others just went home. I went home. I took the lock apart, started studying it. I created my own business.
And it seemed to do
I was doing very good.
Yes.
Then basically, I got involved as a young man. We used to hang out in Snoopy's bar. It was near the Exiles.
Near Exiles in Sliema.
Exactly.
Quite famous. A lot of expats would go there as well. Didn't it have a restaurant upstairs?
Yes. Very good one. Yes. And there was Edwin, the owner.
Yes. And we're talking about the 80s here?
Exactly. 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And there used to hang out many German students who came to Malta to learn English.
Yes, that was a big part of Maltese industry. It still is today. But it started slowly in the 70s, grew in the 80s, and you'd get all these very attractive blondes in a country where most people are dark-haired. You'd get all these holiday romances.
Exactly. And I got involved organizing barbecues for them, making outings, going to, I don't know, Gigantia, I got involved with them. And like you said, lots of blondes, and when you play with fire, you get burned.
I'm sure it's not so negative.
And at one time, I found myself married to one of them.
Ah, you fell in love.
Exactly, I fell in love. And we got married. We got married very quick, to be honest, I think after 6 months.
Gosh.
But we stayed
burning
in Malta.
Burning love.
Yes. We stayed in Malta. We lived in Malta. We had our own flat.
The wife, are you still together?
No, unfortunately not.
I see.
The story goes later on. It was very good.
Okay,
it
and
was
where was she from?
She was from Munich, Germany.
From Munich.
Just outside of Munich.
And you had never been abroad
Not, not even for the wedding. We got married in Malta.
But you had just gone to the UK for the course.
I had the business course. And I had been to Berlin one time in 1986.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yes.
You must tell us about that
I will. Anyway, we got married. My business was growing. I had a very good social life.
Mm-hmm.
But, because there's always a but in stories.
Yes.
My wife's parents, who were very good people, but in those days, they just looked at some atlas, and they saw this little island. And they thought their daughter can't live there.
Oh.
So they wanted that we go and live in Germany.
Ah.
We went, and they tried to convince us, but I never really said yes.
Okay.
Then at one point we went, and they literally made a contract with us. At a notary.
Goodness, how German of them.
At a notary.
You know, German stereotypes. Yeah,
they took us to a notary. Yeah. They had a brand new house, very big house.
Yeah.
Four bedrooms, big garden.
In Munich.
In Munich, mm-hmm. Just outside of Munich.
Yes.
And they said, basically, they will give it to us, to my wife, on condition that we live in it within 5 years.
Oh, gosh. They obviously wanted, you know, grandchildren and whatever.
Exactly.
They wanted them to be close.
They wanted their daughter to be near them.
Yes. Do you mind if I ask you their impression? Because the program is called Malta Through International Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So way back in the 80s, when you married this German girl from Munich and her parents, what was their impression of Malta and of what was your relationship with them?
I think, to be honest, they were afraid of Malta. But they had not much information. Mm-hmm. They just looked at the atlas. They saw Malta next to Libya.
Ah.
And they were really worried. I remember one time
Of course, this is pre-internet,
isn't it? Yes, pre-internet. I remember once I went to see them, and my father-in-law was showing me how to use hot water.
he thought we were a very backward country.
Exactly.
Okay. We have to say that at the time, Libya was going through, it was led by a dictator, always in the news.
Yes.
So perhaps you don't completely blame them that they were worried that Malta must be in the sphere of influence of, I don't know, terrorism or whatever.
Exactly. Mm. So they made this contract with the notary. We signed it.
Okay.
And, you know, when you're young, you take things always with a bit of fun. So for me, I thought, I'll sign it, but I never intended to go to Germany.
Okay.
And we came back to Malta, continued our life, and one time...
And your wife was happy here.
Yes. She was happy. She worked at the Metropole Hotel, in the Atlas Hotel. She was very successful.
Okay.
She was also very positive.
And she liked the climate here, probably.
She liked the Maltese. She was very happy here. Mm-hmm. But one time when the 5 years were coming, they phoned, they said, hello.
Contract.
Contract.
Goodness me. This is hilarious.
And I said, oh, God, they are serious, you know. So my wife flew and I flew some 10 days later. And I made the plan secretly to fail.
Okay.
So I thought, okay, I will go to Germany. Mm-hmm. I will try my best. It will not work because who knows me, you know? Mm-hmm. Then I will tell them I'm very sorry, tried my best.
Okay.
Come back to Malta and try to get out of this contract.
Did you know any German by this
nothing,
time?
Nothing, not even okay. one word. So we went up around May.
And of what year?
In 1992.
Okay.
May 1992. Mm-hmm. And I made a contract with the local Volkshochschule. This is more or less like the evening classes, or like today you have this long life learning.
Okay, yes.
To teach English there.
To teach English?
Yes, I offered 10 courses.
Courses.
And my secret plan was that nobody will book them. Because I said, people don't know me. Uh-huh. Nobody will book them. Then I can tell my parents-in-law, sorry, bad luck.
This is not working.
I mean, what can I do? I go back to Malta. Uh-huh. And we came back down to Malta. Then around September, we phoned. We said, hello, by any chance, has anyone booked the courses? They said, yes, where are you? They are full.
Oops. Oh, no.
Then it was 10 days to go. So it was all systems go. My wife left the next day. And I...
To prepare the way.
Exactly.
House was waiting.
Exactly. House was waiting. Goodness. And I shot 10 days later on my way to the airport, still dealing with my clients.
Of course, your business.
Business, yes.
Your parents must have been a bit upset that you were leaving Malta, I guess.
Yes, but I think it happened so quickly. They had no chance to react.
Okay.
And plus, they were happy for us too, in a way, you know. Mm-hmm. And I remember... I arrived in Germany on a Sunday evening at 9 o'clock, and my first lesson was Monday morning, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Gosh.
So I arrived full of Malta, still Malta in my head, brown, suntan, you know, slim. Yes. And I remember I go into this room, there were some 20 people, 18 of them housewives and 2 men. And I go in, I say, hello, my name is Victor. And I'm here to teach you English. And I've been only 12 hours in Germany. And it was funny because they looked at me. And one time, some 5 years later, I met them. And they told me, they thought either I'm good or crazy. And I said, and which one of them? They said both.
Did you? I have to ask this question. Mm-hmm. 92, you say. Mm-hmm. So you lived in Malta in the 80s.
Yes, yes, yes.
Do you remember that television program, Mind Your Language,
yes,
that they used to show here?
Yes.
Did you have any situations teaching English?
Hundreds of them. Hundreds of them. We used to. And I think my success also was based because I took it with humor.
Mm.
Okay? You need to know, my life motto is whatever I do with passion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And many years before, not connected to the story, I had read a book by Edward de Bono.
He's
a professor about lateral thinking.
Yes, the great Maltese international figure.
And he said this story about, like, in life, everybody has a chance to become better. But it's up to you to take the chance. Mm-hmm. And so for me, although I tried to fail, but in the back of my mind, I said, yeah, this is a chance. Hello, a house in Germany.
Mm.
We're not talking, it was expensive, very expensive, plus a chance to start my business in Germany.
Ah.
So again, I went and I started doing these 10 courses. And I don't know why. I think it was also my style. In those days, people, when they were learning languages, it was very old-fashioned, you know, like
repetition.
I run, he runs, we run, whatever, you know.
Yes.
And I started, it was a type of, it's called acquisition learning. Mm. That means you learning is the side product.
Yes.
And I started, like, going to the classroom, telling them stories. I started to write my own stories. A full page story, for example, how I learned to swim.
Mm-hmm.
And then the students would have to next week come up with their own story.
In English.
In English, of
course. Of course.
We had only one rule. Mm-hmm. Speak only English. And for the students, it was a hit. because compared to my colleagues who were teaching from the standard books, here was a guy where the story, they could talk to you. Say, did you really do this? Why did you say this?
Yeah, conversation.
Yes.
Animation.
Yes, there was the author sitting in front of them.
Yeah.
And so it was really...
And to them, like, your stories were quite exotic on this island.
Yes. I always try to make it with a bit of... For example, like my story about swimming, it's really one of my best stories. And I state how I come from Malta, swimming on the beach, having fun, you know.
Yes.
And then I go to Germany and I try to swim. And there you go to a swimming pool. And you have to follow 100 rules.
Of course.
And so it was.
So that's a talking point.
Yes.
Practice English, isn't it? Yeah.
How I had to pay the machine, how I had to find the locker, how I had to... have a shower, not to swim to the, from the left side, not jump, things like this.
Okay.
But I always wrote a bit of fun. And sometimes about how I went camping, things like this.
Okay.
And my courses became so successful.
Yeah.
That by the next semester, they were already with the waiting list.
To sign up for your
sign up for my course.
And you had never really trained to be
a teacher of English
or anything.
No,
goodness me.
I took, of course, a course. I had a TEFLA certificate.
Okay.
But it was my first teaching lesson ever.
So I had no experience.
But at least
you did the TEFL course.
Yes.
And you know maybe a couple of books that you could use.
Yes. So I took the full course.
Mm-hmm.
But I went there starting from zero.
Gosh. And... To skip to the future, you were so successful that eventually you ended up working for big companies.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, because...
Because then eventually, I was very successful in the town where I was living, Pfaffenhofen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very good marketing person. So I thought now I will try to attack Munich, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I made a contract with the international school in Munich called Berlitz School.
Okay, Berlitz is very famous, yes.
And they signed me up, but never phoned me.
Oh.
So 3 weeks passed, they never phoned me. Then it was one Monday morning, and they phoned me. They had a big, big problem. One teacher was sick, and they had a big, big manager from a company called Etong. Etong is very famous in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
They make bricks.
Oh, okay.
And they asked me if I could jump in.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered my principle. This is my chance.
Yes.
So I drove to Munich. It was 50 kilometers away. I arrived. I gave this guy the lesson of my life. With full Maltese enthusiasm, full power, went back home. Then the next day, the normal teacher came in.
Yes.
And in the evening, the directress phoned me.
Oh.
And she said, Mr. Schickner, what did you do? I said, why, nothing. I just gave a lesson. She said, well, we have a problem because this guy told us now... He can't pronounce your name, but if any other teacher comes in who's not the teacher from Malta, he will kick him out.
Oops. Oh, you left quite an impression then.
And so suddenly, from not being called, I was being sent to top companies, BMW, Deutsche Telekom.
Gosh.
And when I say BMW, it was not BMW showroom. No, I was working in the test center.
Gosh.
Where you see cars which are going to come out 2-3 years later.
Yes.
It was beautiful. And before I knew
And BMW needed, the executives at BMW needed to learn English because at the time they were about to buy the English company Rover, weren't they?
Yes. In fact, I even made translations.
And eventually they bought Rolls Royce
Gosh. And so I was working with engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I forgot to tell you, previously in Malta as a young man, I had studied as a goldsmith.
Okay.
I was a goldsmith.
Okay.
And funnily enough, the technique used for casting gold is the same technique that they would use, for example, for casting a cylinder head.
Oh.
It's just bigger.
Okay.
Just bigger. And so my technical background came into use.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked with the films, I worked one time with Robin Williams in the art department.
Gosh, Robin Williams, the comedian, when he was here doing Popeye.
Yes. I used to meet him every day because my bosses made the arms for him. He had like silicone arms.
Of course, big Popeye, Popeye arms.
We used to make him 2-3 arms per day. And he used to come every morning. I used to make him a coffee. Say, good morning, Robin. He's a very, very nice man.
What a big loss, sir. Yes.
When he died, I was very sorry.
Yes.
He was really, how you see him, he was.
This is 1980 or 79 when he was filming his very first movie, Popeye the Sailor Man, together with Shelley Duvall, who passed away recently as well. We're recording in 2025. I think she passed away last year. So, goodness me, what experiences you've been through in your life and what interesting people you've met.
And so when I was in Germany then doing these technical lessons, all this experience came back to me.
Now, again, I always have to refer back to Malta through international eyes because that's the title of the program. And these experiences with some of these high-powered people in the 90s when you were teaching them English, their impressions of you, of Malta, of the Maltese, had some of them been over here? Do you remember what kind of reactions you'd get when you'd say you're from Malta? What was the average?
I would say in general, it was always positive. So the thing is, I think what maybe people misunderstand, in those days, about 250,000 Germans a year would come to Malta.
For tourism.
For tourism. But because I also worked 6 months in Nuremberg Airport selling Malta.
You've done everything, have you?
A bit, yes.
That thing you learned from Edward de Bono,
grasp opportunities. Yes.
You don't stay back, you just make things happen. Yes.
That was also a funny story.
Very inspiring.
I just wanted to buy a ticket to England.
Yes.
And with my limited German, she misunderstood me and she booked me. And I didn't want to pay the cancellation fees.
She booked you a ticket somewhere else?
Yes, to England. I just wanted information.
Okay.
And my ex-wife, working with tourism, I knew the agency in Germany. So I phoned her boss. And he talked to her. He said, okay, cancel the flight, no problem. Then he asked me, what are you doing in Germany? And he gave me a job because he had, with Air Malta contract, every Saturday, 30 seats to sell.
Oh.
And he had the idea, it would be a good idea to put a Maltese there.
Yes.
And it worked. And I told him, I have no idea from Ernest. I said, don't worry, we'll do all for you. You just make your blah, blah, so to speak, and we'll do all for you. And I was selling. We were selling the plane full.
You managed to...
Yes, because I think for the tourists in those days, keep in mind, this was pre-Google, pre-whatever.
Indeed.
Going to an airport... And someone telling them, go to Malta, take bus number 62, ask for Edwin, ask for the barman Joe.
That must have left a big impression on them.
Yes, you know them. Yes, of course, I was there yesterday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you were their own personal Google.
And sort of, this was very good. And I was very successful.
So you were telling us like the impression, the average German impression of Malta and of the Maltese and of you.
Well, it was very good, yes. Of course, on the other hand, I learned when you live in another country, whether you like it or not, you're an ambassador to your country.
Especially when it's a small country like Malta.
Exactly. So in those days...
Because if you're, I don't know, British, people might get a bad impression of the city you're from, but the other parts of the country, you're not representing them. But for Malta, we're so small that you literally represent all of Malta. Indeed. Do go on.
And that's one thing I realized, sort of like for the Germans, the Maltese are... People with a sense of humor, brown, slim.
Slim?
I was slim in those days. I was underweight. And sort of I realized, in a way, I have a responsibility. I was giving the picture of Malta.
Yes.
On the other hand, when something happened in Malta, I was also confronted with it.
Such as?
Example, one time I think there was a referendum and the people had voted a bit against Europe.
Oh, okay.
In the beginning, something like that. Or we had elected a government who was against Europe.
Yes. That was in the late 90s when the application for Malta to join the EU was frozen.
And I remember going to BMW, find the newspaper on the desk and they told me, you hate us.
Interesting.
And sort of whenever something happened, you are confronted with it, you know?
Yes. Because there was a big debate whether we should join or not here in Malta in the late 90s. And then the government changed for a couple of years and the application was frozen. And then the government changed again 2 years later. We had a snap election and the application was reinstated. But for a while, yes, we had declined. We had decided not to join the EU after all, which eventually happened in 2004. So goodness me, you had to explain the reasoning behind Malta's decision at the time because you were asked these questions.
Yeah, you were explaining it's politics, you know. It doesn't mean I agree with the decision. It's what the government decided.
Yes, yes.
Often, for example, of course, I was confronted about hunting, for example. The Germans...
Would the stories make it to the newspapers?
Yes, I see.
It's a big hobby here in Malta.
Yes, this was... The Germans love nature. They love nature. They have lots of hunters, too. In Germany, but it's a total other concept. It's a total other concept. In Germany, if you're a hunter, you get basically a piece of forest, more or less the size of half Malta.
Yeah.
They tell you how many animals you have, 10 foxes, 10 boars, 20 whatever, and you get it for 5 years, and in 5 years, you have to give it back with the same amount of animals.
Oh, but to one person or to a group,
to a group of hunters. Yes. So they would actually go and feed the animals in winter.
Oh, I see.
They go to feed them.
The sustainability.
Yes.
Concept.
Then they would wait for the animals to be born. They would wait for the animal to be independent. Mm. Then they shoot the mother, so to speak.
Ah, okay. It's so very sustained, scientifically German.
And so in these things, sometimes it was hard. But in general, I never was anywhere when I said I come from Malta that I had a bad reception. Mostly people always said they know someone who knows someone who was in Malta.
I see. Now, Victor, I'm speaking to Victor Scicluna, who spent a substantial amount of his life living in Germany. And he's telling us about Malta through international eyes, his experiences in Germany, German experiences or German views of Malta. I'm Colin Fitz. This is Campus 103.7. Now, perhaps you have a song or a tune that you'd like us to play to have a break from the chat that maybe represents your time in Germany or you, your life. Do you have a suggestion?
Actually, I do, but it's a Maltese song.
That's absolutely fine.
And I have a story behind it.
Please, tell us.
We were in the mountains and we were, I think, some 20 different nationalities.
In Bavaria.
Yes, in Bavaria.
Okay.
Yes. And everybody had to sing a song from his country.
Oh, okay. Well, what was the occasion, though?
We were just in a camping
a social
site,
thing.
Teachers seminar, you know, training seminar, something like that.
Okay.
And when I came up, I realized I don't know one Maltese song.
Gosh.
And this was going to ask you to play, The Karotzin from the Greenfields.
The Greenfields song, Il Karotzin, absolutely.
And
yes.
I just started, Il Karotzin, and I knew nothing else.
You didn't know the words?
No. And this made me think a bit about it. Mm-hmm. That sort of like, we in those days, we were somehow embarrassed to be Maltese.
This is the 90s, we're saying.
Yes, like if a person come, give him fish and chips.
Yes.
Give him Rosselforn, you know, give him...
Oh, you mean when tourists would come, we'd give them a lot of international cuisine,
but be embarrassed
to give them exactly. Maltese cuisine.
And that made me laugh, the Maltese song. So that song I would like.
You're absolutely right. There's been, in fact, it's more in the 2000s that this awareness began. And then people started to embrace Maltese songs, Maltese cuisine, and things that are Maltese. And we started to realize that many tourists want to come here for the authenticity, to discover something different, not to come here to experience the same things as they do in their own country. But it took some time after independence for us to embrace this concept. You're absolutely right. So probably today, if somebody was in your position, they would sing Shemsh with Sabiha, because it's become a very popular song again. It's a traditional Maltese song, quite traditional, but people know the words. But perhaps at the time, I think I seem to remember having the same problem when I was abroad and we were asked, like, sing something from your country. I think we ended up singing Lancha Jaya Wohra Seira, which, after all, is not a proper Maltese song. It's based on a song from Naples. Now, nevertheless, this program is about Victor Scicluna, and you have chosen Il Karotzin, about the Maltese traditional carriage, a song by the Greenfields.
Karotzin kollam bismin Mitreqat jatet maldin Jitbaxxew kerit bejhin Il-kulċir ferħan sejtir Bittabija barranin Waqt li il-qampin ajdo Noti Halloween Ċeklem, ċeklem karotzin Min ġottoro imserfin Ur il-ħajja tana il-maldin ċeklem, ċeklem karozzin, min ġottoro imserfin, pur il-ħajja kana il-malqin. Wadda tal-karozzin, u s-segnali tal-kuċċir, wisajam l-unnis fit-triq, wicċom ferħin ma bid-dir. Dan u l-wirdan għal-maltin, u beħahna imkabrin, waqt li l-qampin għajdu, noti Halloween. ċeklem, ċeklem karozzin, min ġottoro imserfin, pur il-ħajja tagħna il-maltin. Ċeklem, ċeklem karozzin, min ġottoro imserfin, pur il-ħajja tagħna il-maltin. Ċeklem, ċeklem karozzin, min ġottoro imserfin, pur il-ħajja tagħna il-maltin. Ċeklem, ċeklem karozzin, min ġottoro imserfin, pur il-ħajja tagħna il-maltin. Ċeklem, 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 ċeklem.
And there we had the Greenfields, a very popular Maltese folk group who have been around since the 70s and have written quite a lot of songs about Maltese traditions. I'm speaking to Victor Scicluna, who is my guest on Malta Through International Eyes, Minainain Baranin on Campus 103.7. You spent 29 years in Germany from the late 80s onwards, and you also spent 6 months in the Ukraine, in Odessa, Ukraine. At which point of your life did this happen?
This was basically the last part of the 29 years. Mm-hmm. So at one point, my marriage in Germany, unfortunately, it finished. Mm-hmm. And I got married again, this time to an Ukrainian girl.
I see. Who you met in Germany?
Who I met in Ukraine.
You met in Ukraine. Okay.
That's also itself a very, very special story, because I had never, ever been to that part of the country.
I don't think many Maltese would, apart from the Maltese maybe who have a relationship with someone from Ukraine, it's not a country that is on Malta's sort of destination map for the average traveler, and even less so now, unfortunately, because of the war. But yes, so you met a Ukrainian lady.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the idea was I had gone to a travel site, Tipo, and I had written that I'm coming, mm-hmm. and I asked if anybody has the time to show me the city.
I see. Okay.
And six people answered me.
Okay.
And one of them is now my present wife.
Right. Oh, that's lovely. And I believe you lived or you spent some time in Odessa?
Yes. We've
which is on the Black Sea.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Then we decided to move to Odessa to go and live there.
Now, Odessa is a very historic city. Yes. There's even movies. I remember watching something called The Odessa File once.
Exactly.
And I think it's also a very contentious, as in like the Russian government believes it should belong to Russia. Ukraine believes it should belong to Ukraine. Am I correct?
This is very hard to explain, because my wife, she's a Russian-speaking Ukrainian.
Okay.
But people assume because she's Russian speaking, it means she is pro-Russia. No, 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 no.
I see. Very complicated.
They are very proud Ukrainian.
Okay.
Okay. It's like if I'm an English speaking Maltese, doesn't mean I'm pro-Britain. I'm Maltese.
Absolutely.
So,
yes.
So they're 100% Ukrainians.
Yes.
And we decided to live there. We bought a flat there. Mm-hmm. Complete shell form.
Am I right to say it's in the Crimea or Odessa?
It's near the Crimea. Facing the Crimea.
Okay.
It's facing the Crimea. And we lived there for nearly 1 year. Mm-hmm. Till January 2022.
Okay.
Then we went back to Germany, basically to close Germany down and move to Ukraine.
Permanently. Because you still had property maybe in Germany.
Exactly. Had a property. We were packed. We were in the car. We were starting to drive. Mm-hmm. To go to Ukraine. And then suddenly we got the news that the war broke out.
Oh, no. Oh, goodness me.
And I'm a type of person, I always say, cry 3 days, but move on.
Okay. 3 days.
Yes.
All right. That's enough time to get it out of your system.
So, of course, we're really shocked.
Of course.
Then we turned the car and we started heading to Italy.
Okay.
coming down to Malta. And I phoned some of my friends. I said, hi. I said, I have a problem. They said, what happened, Vic? I said, technically speaking, I'm a refugee now. I sold my house in Germany. Mm-hmm. We can't live in Ukraine.
Yes.
I need a place. And I couldn't believe it. Within 3-4 days, I got an offer for 2 different flats from friends of mine, which I could use.
Oh, that's nice.
So we came down to Malta. We still had an old house in Malta, which we had bought in 95.
Uh-huh.
But it had been rented out to someone.
Okay.
And so we came to Malta and we stayed at our friend's flat once in Tarsien.
Mm-hmm.
And once in Meliha.
I see.
Very beautiful places. And yes. For me, this reminded me the hospitality of the Maltese.
And what does your Ukrainian wife, can we say her name?
Yes, Yulia.
Yulia. What does Yulia think of Malta, the Maltese, life in Malta?
First of all, Yulia, she is now Maltese.
Okay.
And when she became Maltese, she took the oath that she protects the constitution of Malta.
Yes.
And she takes it very seriously. Don't complain about Malta in front of her.
Okay.
She's very happy. She's very successful here.
Very good.
She got a job here.
Mm-hmm.
A very good job, a very good company. She's really liked. She's very happy. She's learning quite some good Maltese. So she's very happy here.
That's great. That's great to hear.
But till our flat was empty,
mm-hmm.
we had a son who lived in Israel.
I see. This is interesting.
This is Yulia's direct son.
Yulia's son lives in Israel.
He lived in Israel. And we had nowhere to go. So he told us, come and stay with him in Israel.
I see. So this is, what year are we
this
talking?
This is again 2022, exactly.
Okay.
So we went and we stayed nearly 6 months in Israel.
Goodness. And now that's interesting.
Yes. For me, it changed my whole concept of Israel. I love Israel
mm-hmm.
nowadays. And to be honest, I think, I know it sounds hard to say. If I could afford it, I would live there.
Really?
Yes.
Despite the fact that it is often in the middle of some sort of war zone.
So let's forget politics. As mm-hmm. a country, imagine, let's say, Arid Dut in Sliema.
Yes. Okay? Yes.
Now, make that 60 kilometers longer.
Okay.
With a sandy beach. Doesn't stop.
Oh, yes.
And I didn't even know this about Israel. It's really a country where it's full of beach, lots of small
Mediterranean.
Beautiful
coastline.
Places. Very, very. You change. If you go to Jerusalem, it's one thing, you know, it's the old city. But then you go to the new cities. It's a beautiful country. It's a mm-hmm. very beautiful country. And we had a car and we stayed 6 months.
Yes.
I had the experience to experience Israeli hospital.
Hospital?
Yes. I was in hospital. A typical funny story. We were walking in the street and I saw a cat hanging upside down.
Oh.
It was caught in some wire and it was going to die.
Oh.
And I couldn't take it. I decided to rescue this cat.
Mm, good for you.
Yes.
I'm a big cat lover, so you're my hero.
But the cat bit me.
Well, it panics, doesn't it?
It's okay. It's normal. What I didn't know is that because they're afraid that the cat can have...
rabies.
Exactly, of course.
Exactly.
So I had to stay there 1 month extra.
Gosh.
With 6 injections.
Oh, goodness.
€600 cost.
Oh, yeah.
But it was, from one side, nice to experience a hospital in another country, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally had a very good experience there. I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we will go back again as soon as the flights open. Not to stay, just for holiday. But
so you spent some time in Israel as well.
Yes.
What was the average reaction from the average Israeli when you tell them that you're from Malta?
I think, to be honest, they know very little about us.
Mm-hmm.
I think they know very little about us. It looks very similar.
Israel, the
because
country.
Also there was, keep in mind, there was one time a British presence there too, you know?
Indeed.
So it looks very similar. Houses look very similar.
Mm-hmm. In fact, the film Munich, which was filmed by Steven Spielberg here in Malta a few years ago, first of all, you mentioned Arid Dut, the promenade, which was one of the places that featured in the film as pretending to be Israel.
Because it looks the same.
Because it looks very similar, so you're absolutely right there. Yes. And the British presence, of course, has was in both countries. So there are those similarities. But the average Israeli perhaps doesn't even know where Malta is or wouldn't even have heard of it.
I think, to be honest, except
in Eurovision, maybe.
Most people, like even my experience living abroad, even in Germany, when I say I come from Malta, everybody has heard Malta.
Okay.
But most of them think, for example, they mix it up with Mallorca or Malaga.
Ah.
They tell us, you belong to Spain. No, no, I say we're an independent country. So for me, like, for example, when I arrived once in Odessa.
Yes.
At pass control, three passport officers came to look at my passport. They had never seen a Maltese passport before.
And this is in the 2020s.
Yes.
Goodness me.
Yes, yes.
Because I know that in 1986, we mentioned it earlier, you went to East Berlin.
Yes.
And that must have been an interesting experience for the passport controllers there, knowing how much security there was in the former East Germany. Tell us about that.
Yes, I think that for me was an experience that changed my life in a way. Because I was in West Berlin.
Yes.
And I decided to cross to East Berlin.
Okay.
And
this was a trip that you did as a holiday?
No. Whenever I do something, there was a girl involved.
I see. So you had a relationship with a German
girl? Yes.
Before your first German wife.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And I had gone to visit her for 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
And we went one day to the east side.
Yes.
The problem was, when I was on the west side, it was okay with a Maltese passport. As soon as I crossed into the east and they saw a Maltese passport, they literally flipped out. They took me to a special office. They were shouting.
Really? Yes,
they were literally shouting. My friends couldn't come with me. They only told me, they are shouting, please look in their eyes when they talk to you.
Oh.
And then all I could understand was Malta. And they were talking, phoning somewhere.
Then this is 1986.
It was still under communist rule.
Communist rule, 4 years before the wall came down.
Exactly.
Yes.
Then they let you through. Then you walk 100 meters and the whole circus starts again.
Really?
Comes another new guard. He phones a new office because they had a system to make sure you don't bribe a guard or something.
Ah.
That was coming in.
Yes.
Then we stayed one day.
Okay.
And what was shocking was to see how empty the streets were. Total empty.
In East Berlin.
And for me, in those days, Malta, I mean, I'm not even sure if our policemen had guns in those days.
Well, only some of them, I believe.
To suddenly see the Berlin Wall full of barbed wire, mines. Then you see crosses. You ask the people, what are those crosses? So those were shot. What do you mean shot? They shot them because they tried to escape.
Gosh, yeah.
And for me, I think it was like a wake-up call. I think I came back to Malta and said, hey guys, you have no idea how lucky we are to have democracy. It's not a perfect system, but we have no idea how lucky we are to be democratic.
Yeah.
And for me, this has changed since that time. I have a deep hate for any dictators.
Well, I'm quite with you there. What an interesting life you have led, Victor Scicluna. Who is my guest on Malta Through International Eyes today. So we mentioned Ukraine, we mentioned Germany, 29 years, we mentioned Israel. So you came back to live here practically since 2022. And what was it like to settle back in such a different Malta from the one you first left it way back in the late 80s, early 90s?
I describe it in a way as very funny because me being Maltese, of course, I still spoke Maltese, but in Malta, we've got the habit, nobody gives you an address.
Mm.
If you want something, people tells you in front of Gazan or in front of whatever.
Okay.
And you say, what Gazan? And you say, Gazan, everybody knows Gazan. Yeah, but I'm not everybody.
I see what you mean. Okay.
And sort of, for us,
Gazan is a company here in Malta. They have various showrooms. And just to explain to our listeners, maybe some of whom have never been to Malta and are listening from abroad. But do go on.
And so sometimes it was very funny because I'm Maltese, but I know nothing about Malta, so to speak.
At least the changes that have happened.
Sort of like, I want to change my ID card. I go to, it was in Baviera somewhere, in Valletta in the end.
Okay.
You go there, you see it's closed, it has nothing to do with it. Now it's called Identita Malta.
Yes, it's moved a number of times.
And sort of in the first months, I think it was just running up and down, like real idiots, but nice. Because we always had to phone everybody because we didn't know where to find things. In Germany, we have Amazon. Mm-hmm. And everything we buy, we order from Amazon, next day free delivery.
Okay.
And in Malta, we had to get used to, if you need something, you need to go to 5 shops.
I see.
To find something.
You can buy stuff online here, but it takes a couple of days to come from abroad.
Exactly. And in Germany, we had sometimes same-day delivery. Next day.
Yes, very convenient.
So that was one thing. Next thing, I think we missed the nature. Mm. Sort of where we lived in Germany, we had very, very beautiful forests. Lots of lakes.
The south of Germany, Bavaria.
Yes, Bavaria. Lots of lakes. We used to go hours and hours walking in the forest.
Yes.
Here, sort of like people tell you, for example, go for a walk there. For example, we went to Wittfulia. Mm-hmm. Very nice. But for me, that's the introduction of a forest.
Of course.
Just like, okay, we made the round. Mm-hmm. Now where do we start? And then you realize this is it. So in the beginning, it was a bit of confused. And I think people would think, but he's Maltese. How come he doesn't know this, you know?
Well, you weren't young when you left Malta. Yes, you were already in your late 20s, weren't you? So
yeah, but I think in these 30 years, Malta changed completely. Changed completely.
A lot of what nature there was before. And it was always very limited and small, but it's reduced a lot.
So, for example, if we go to Vittorioza Burgo.
Yes.
I remember when I left Malta, there was the dockyard there.
Yes. Very industrial.
Yes, now it's a beautiful yacht marina.
So you've seen improvements as well.
Yes, so many things are even much better.
Yes.
Of course, then you get used to the cranes everywhere.
The construction boom that's happened. We
bought a flat here then in Malta. And we had to sort of get used to also Maltese bureaucracy because the Germans complain that they have a lot of bureaucracy.
Yes, but in Germany.
Yes, but in Malta we have it too.
Yes, it's a different kind of bureaucracy.
Yes, different kind of bureaucracy. But on the other hand, one thing that always kept us happy here is the people. For us, sort of, the Germans are very organized.
Yes.
But nobody's going to tell you good morning.
Okay.
Here, you know, everybody, oh, Victor, hey, hi, you know, everybody's like here when you need something. You ask, and everybody tells you what to do, where to go.
They try and help.
Yes, everybody.
Yes. But if you're lost in a street in Germany, it's not like they're going to ignore you or send you to hell. They will help you.
No. The Germans are very technical. The Germans will tell you, third street to the right, fourth street on the left, turn right, and you get it. In Malta, they will start a conversation with you.
Okay, that's true. Yes.
In Malta, they say, yes, because I was yesterday there. Yes.
And that's a nice thing about Malta.
That's the nice thing.
You feel.
So this is something we like here.
If you're speaking English in Malta, and I have to tell you, you do have a slight German way of speaking English. Have you been told this before?
Yes, it's quite
endearing, I think.
Because keep in mind, the 30 years I was speaking English, I was not speaking English to English people, but to Germans. And so I even practiced to speak very clear, very, very... not too fast, maybe.
Yes.
Because I was working always with beginners.
Of course.
And sort of, you have to be careful not to say suitcase, luggage, 12 words for the same thing, you know?
Of course.
You practice saying the same thing. Yes, I have an accent. And when I speak Maltese, the Maltese tell me, you are not from here.
Yeah. Speaking of, you haven't forgotten your Maltese.
No.
You still remember your Maltese, but you speak it with an accent.
Yes. Keep in mind, I was 30 years alone in Germany. I had no one to speak to.
Maltese.
What I used to do when I was to be on the highway, I used to speak to myself in Maltese. I would literally start speaking to myself in Maltese because I had no one to speak to.
Okay. And have you learned German as well along the way? You must have learned it in those 30 years.
I think, without bluffing, I can say I have a very good level of German. In fact, I also used to do many translations. I even translated 2 books, for example. Mercedes-Benz opened a company in India, and they made a book too for the opening with lots of photos.
Yes.
And I was chosen to translate it.
Oh, well done. That's amazing.
So, yes, my German is very good, I would say.
What about Malta nowadays? Very different from 30 years ago when you left, as in many more international people, people from all over the world live here now. How has that affected you, or how do you see that?
I think in the beginning, we were a bit shocked. I remember when I arrived at the airport, I took a taxi and an Indian guy picked me up.
Yes, which was wouldn't have happened way back in the 80s.
And I went to my brother and told him, you know what, an Indian guy picked me up. He said, really? He said, that's normal.
Yes.
So I was a bit surprised because, like, in Germany, you don't see this. You don't see non-EU people in the country.
Really?
No, no. And here, in the beginning, I was totally mixed up. I was thinking, but we joined the EU. How come hundreds of Indians, Pakistanis...
People from Asia.
What has this to do with the
EU? South America.
Exactly. Mm. Sort of, it got me some... I really needed to get used to this in the beginning.
But I thought that in Germany, for example, there was the whole refugee thing in 2016 where the doors were opened for the Syrians. I know there's a lot of Turkish people who work in Germany. Did you not, on average, meet people from outside the EU on your travels in Germany?
Not really, no. Because I think even though, let's say, 1 million Germans came, 1 million, sorry, foreigners came to Germany when Merkel opened the door.
Yes.
Keep in mind, Germany is a very big country.
So they were absorbed
into the system. So you saw them.
Yes.
But let's say when 100,000 are in Malta, it's 25%. In Malta, you feel it more.
Yes.
You feel more. For me, I lived, of course, I would say, half my life as a foreigner. So from one side, I'm very open-minded. On the other side, it is, of course, changing Malta. It is changing Malta. Not that it's a problem. Don't misunderstand me. But in the beginning, I had to get used to it.
Okay.
So that's something you don't see in Germany. The Germans are still in control.
Okay.
Here, wherever you go, you see foreigners.
Okay.
So in Malta, you feel, I think because Malta is a small country, you feel it much more.
Okay, and maybe you feel that the culture is changing quicker.
Yes, quicker. My philosophy was always, first of all, when I was in German, I never wanted to be part of the foreigner groups.
Okay.
Because this is the mistake many foreigners do. When they go to a country, they stay together as a clique. I was always part of the culture. So, for example, when I was in Germany, I became part of the Maypole Club. They have in the 1st of May, they put the maypole up. You wear the leather trousers. You wear the full...
Like a polka type thing.
The
leather hosen.
The German
costume, traditional costume, the little black hat.
Exactly.
Drink lots of beer.
You drink your beer.
I see.
I was taught that I was a part of the group.
So you joined the German traditions?
Yes. I was also, for example, I have two boys in Germany.
Yes.
They are still there. And I was part of the parents' council.
At the school.
And I was very proud. I was elected. I was number two in the election.
Oh.
Yes. So I was a total active member of the German society when I was there.
Yes. And you tried to do it in the German way.
Yes.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, we're not saying that people maybe from Asia are not trying to be or do things in the Maltese way. But it does take some getting used to, I think. Yes, as you say, that such a huge amount of people have been brought here at the same time. Many of them doing very important jobs, one has to say. But I can understand how it's something that one has to get used to when you've lived predominantly in countries where it's been either Maltese or Germans that you've been exposed to. Well, I think we can conclude this interview here, but I'm sure you can tell us many other exciting stories. I'd just like you to conclude, Victor Scicluna, my guest in today's edition of Malta Through International Eyes, Minainain Baranin. You can find previous editions of this program. We have 4 seasons of it on the website of Campus 103.7. The series is called Minainain Baranin, Malta Through International Eyes. You can Google it. You should be able to find it. And it's been really great talking to you, Victor. But I'd like you to conclude with one of your catchphrases, one of your slogans that has helped you make such a success of your life.
Well, when I had my own business, I always said, for example, success is not a method. Success is a result. Mm-hmm. So for me, I always believed in results.
Okay.
And the other method, I always say, whatever you do, do from your heart.
Okay.
And for me, now that I'm in Malta,
yeah,
we will do our best to make Malta also a good stay.
Yes.
And I wish the Maltese the best. It's a lovely country, and I think we should learn to love it a bit more.
And with that, we'll conclude Malta Through International Eyes. Mina Inay Baranin on campus 103.7. I have been Colin Fitz. Thank you for joining me. And Victor Shikluna. It's been a pleasure.